want to start by saying I think the majority of teachers are in their profession because they want to play an important role in the lives of children, and they take that role seriously. As with every workplace, there will always be some workers who give the rest of them a bad name. Interesting story in the Globe and Mail by Naomi Buck, a Toronto-based writer and a mom. She talks about the season of the substitute teachers as the days count down to summer holidays and instruction gives way to movies, games, and popsicles. Buck doesn't begrudge teachers their summer holiday, but wishes they would wait until summer before getting it started, saying a full third of the 63-member staff at her son's elementary school have been missing every Friday this month, as they also were in the days before Christmas. Until 2012, most school boards in Ontario granted teachers 20 sick days with the provision that unused sick days to a maximum of 200 could be paid out at retirement. Dalton McGuinty's Liberal government ended that, saying the payout represented a $1.7 billion liability that our heavily indebted province could not sustain. So those 20 bankable days were reduced to 11 non-bankable sick days. All of a sudden, a lot more teachers were getting sick. In 2017, Ontario's Auditor General noted a 29% increase in the number of teachers taking sick days. In addition to the 11 sick days, school boards offer a varying number of leave days for professional, personal, religious, or medical reasons. And on top of that, the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario has up to 120 short-term disability days at 90% pay. That's in a school year of 194 days. Sick leave as a percentage of total payroll has increased 25% since 2011, with teacher absenteeism costing school boards just shy of $1 billion a year. Sick days are just that, meant to be taken if you're sick. They are not days off owed to you every year. Teachers get a lot of time off every year, as they should. That's the profession they chose, and it comes with the perks of summers off, as well as time off at Christmas and March break. A mental health day every now and then is understandable, but making sure to take every single allowable sick day because you feel it's owed to you is not. On the panel this morning, Randy Rahamim, principal at Navigator with a focus on management, design, and execution of public affairs, stakeholder management, and communications campaigns. Sandy Annunziata, Niagara Regional Councillor representing the town of Fort Erie, chair of the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority, and former pro athlete in the CFL. And Jennifer Innes, Regional Councillor, Wards 3 and 4, town of Caledon within the region of Peel. And it is Randy, Sandy, and Jenny from the farm, right? All right, I got that. Let me start with Jenny and my little bit of a rant. But you know what? It's a thing that I think has gotten out of control when it comes to the way that teachers look at the sick days and what sick days are supposed to be.
And I think it's not, I think we have to be fair and say that this is not all teachers. I think that in every profession, you're going to have the bad apple. But I, you know, I look at the end of the year, I've got two kids, grades 3 and kindergarten. And they're not really doing much right now, right? They're watching videos. They are having popsicles. There is an AC in a good portion of the school. So that's helping to cool them down. But I think the real issue here is the collective agreement that we have with the teachers. So if they're losing their planning time because they are substituting for somebody else who is taking one of these days, they have to be reimbursed with time off before the end of the school year. So it's just a cycle that's repeating itself. And, you know, the issues of that McGuinty brought in to save that, what was it, $1.7 billion? Well,
yep.
we're still wasting $1 billion, which is a significant amount of money that isn't going where it should be, which is to educating our children.
Well, I mean, at that point, unfortunately, though, people, teachers, those who were banking them were looking at sick days as not as sick days, but this is money that's owed to me and is going to be part of my retirement.
Yeah, and I would never go as far as to say that the education system in Ontario is failing our children. But what I will say is we can do a whole lot better. And I think this is indicative when two sides dig their heels in, especially during the CBA, collective bargaining agreements, when you're negotiating new contracts. It's almost as if the entitlements take precedent over what the overall objective is, which is numeracy, literacy, and making sure that our testing scores and making sure that our children are the best and brightest that we're producing, not only in Canada, but certainly in the world. And I think that's where we're failing our children. We can do a whole lot better from a government perspective, from a teaching perspective, and certainly from a parenting perspective as well. So I think until all these sides come together and start putting the education of the children first, we're always going to have these problems.
Yeah.
Ms. Rahameen, you're up.
I think that... Look, I'm totally opposed to teachers trying to log sick days as vacation days, because that's effectively what this is. And I don't think it's limited to teachers. I think it's widespread throughout the public sector. I think I have friends that work for the municipality. I have friends that work at the provincial level. And I can tell you they do a version of this as well. But I think it's also a little bit of a mentality. I think that there's, if you feel that you're constantly being overworked, that there's very little resource within the system, you're going to try and squeeze as much out of it as you possibly can as an employee, because they're not feeling valued. They're not feeling, I think this is overall, they're not feeling like, they feel, I think, like we're asking so much of them. Give your time for extracurricular activities, do all these other things, and then leave these sick days on the table. I could see why some people would be like, okay, fine, I'm going to take as much out of this as I possibly can. At the same time, there's a whole bunch of waste that goes on within the system. So I don't know how we strike a balance and get this right. I can say that my kids don't go to public school. They aren't part of the public school system. I haven't noticed this as much, to be honest with you. Maybe it's just, well, we're not part of the same collective bargaining. But I think that, and they don't have the same agreements. I don't see that. I see that when they are off, they're genuinely sick and they're not off all the time. So, you know, it is a problem with the system. But I bet you if you asked most teachers, they feel like they're overworked and underpaid. And this is a way to potentially compensate them.
Yeah, we were talking before the show, and Sandy was on a field trip last week, and I was at an elementary school yesterday for an awards ceremony. And I have to say, you know, we need to do that every once in a while. Be in the presence of teachers and students and look at them and go, wow, these teachers have a lot of patience. It is not an easy job. I totally get that. I firmly believe that, which is why I said off the top that I think most teachers are in it for the right reasons and get it. And it's the few who abuse this whole sick day situation that create a bad name for the rest of them. Welcome back to the show. Good morning. It is a Tuesday roundtable. Randy, Sandy, and Jenny from the farm. I listen enough that I hear Jerry do that all the time. I know it's not the same when our friend Jerry is not here. Toronto Mayor John Tory is speaking actually right now. He is warning the Ontario and federal governments that his city's shelter system, already home to 3,000 refugees, has no further ability to accommodate new asylum seekers as of today. So a letter was sent out to all Toronto members of Parliament yesterday and lays out what he calls an urgent request for help. It's the latest in an escalating series of pleas that suggest talks among Toronto, the province, and Ottawa on the refugee issue have gone nowhere. You know, it gets very concerning. Randy, I'll start with you. When 800 refugee claimants recently accommodated on an emergency basis in dorms at Centennial and Humber have to be moved by August 9th before students return. Like, that college dorm thing works until it's time for the students to come back. Where are we going to put people?
Well, our shelter system has been struggling without the influx of refugees. So you can only imagine that this is putting extreme added pressure on our system. That's not to say we shouldn't welcome them here, but we need a plan. And if the federal government is basically opening our doors and saying we are going to be a place that welcomes refugees, then maybe the federal government should step up and say, here's what we're doing. Let's face it, most people want to come to the largest municipality in the country. If you're from a foreign city or from a foreign country, there's language services here, more opportunity to get a job, more potential for housing. You might find members of your own community here. This is where you want to be. You're not going to some random municipality in Manitoba. You want to be here. And so recognizing that and dealing with reality, the federal government should say, okay, this is what we're going to offer the City of Toronto in order to ensure that we can actually support them in a way that's meaningful. Because this is, watch for this to be a major municipal election issue. I think this will be huge.
Jenny, I don't think people are divided as to whether people look at it like we don't want people here, we don't want to welcome people. I think a lot of us are quite comfortable and happy to welcome people, but there does have to be a plan in place. We can't be jamming people into our homeless shelters, for instance. So we need to have something in place before we can bring more people in.
I agree. I don't think that this is a matter of the, you know, people that are here saying we don't want any more coming in. I think what they're saying is we deserve a plan. You can't create a plan after the fact. It doesn't work that way. That's how we get into a crisis situation, which we are in. Students are coming in the fall, and we don't have anywhere to send these people. We don't have any services or programs to provide them, let alone to the residents that were already in that system beforehand. So I think, you know, we are looking. I think Randy is right. This is going to be an election issue. It really needs to be an election issue next year as well, in the upcoming federal election. I think that members of parliament, particularly the ones in the GTA, better be standing up and taking note, because this is an issue that is going to hound them until next fall. They have to have a plan. The plan cannot come after the fact, which is already what they're doing. Offering $11 million when they're already saying it's a $65 million problem is not a solution. That's not a solution. We need all three levels of government working together and trying to pass the buck, you know, saying that the money's being filtered down. I'm sorry, Adam Vaughan, you cannot say that we're passing the buck to the province. This is a federal issue. Immigration is a federal issue, and you need to step up and take responsibility.
Wow. Yeah. And I think this doesn't surprise me. This doesn't surprise me at all. And when policy is crafted based on political messaging and warm fuzziness, this is the result. And instead of the warm, fuzzy messages, you should have had a practical plan in place. And I'm all for stronger borders. I'm all for having a plan to make sure that this crisis doesn't occur on a regular basis. There's no capacity. And anytime someone mentioned the fact that there was no capacity, that there was no plan in place, you were either branded or you were labeled as someone that didn't want any refugees or migrants coming to your area. It's absolutely ridiculous. To Jenny's point, absolutely. Adam Vaughan, stop passing the buck. This is a federal issue. You have your municipal and your provincial partners asking for help. And asking for the federal government to roll out the plan that has been promised for well over 2 years now. And for somehow we have to go with, you know, cap in hand in order to get the funding to create a solution to a problem that you created.
Kind of makes me think of the legalization of marijuana and how it's such a rush through to make the big announcement. But are the plans in place? Everybody seems to be scrambling after the fact, whether it comes to people being able to smoke in their homes and in the workplace, and are police up to speed with the testing and all of that.
Right. But I would say what's perhaps more important than a plan might just be resources. I mean, if you can't look, there are some problems that a federal government's going to face that they're not going to be able to plan for. But certainly they've had enough time now to say, we're going to find additional resources for the municipalities in order to handle this issue. I also think there's another way to look at this. And that is there a role for the private sector to play in stepping up here? Because there are lots of people that want to make a political stand, contribute to civic society. There are lots of organizations that want to do this. Well, there are 800 refugee claimants that are now going to be needing housing by August 9th. Maybe somebody from the private sector could stand up.
And on the roundtable this morning, Randy Rahamim, Sandy Annunziata, Jennifer Innes, Randy, Sandy, and Jenny from The Farm. And Randy, we get a lot done in here during the breaks. You just helped install some floor tiling.
Yep. If anyone needs me later on, if you need some minor construction work around the house, just give me a call.
Yes. And is it in straight? Because I can't see on that side of the
house.
Not at all.
No. I have glue all over my shoes now, but that's okay.
All right. Two specialists have been disciplined for sending abusive and bullying emails to the former president of the Ontario Medical Association. The pair, who faced separate disciplinary hearings at the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario yesterday, pleaded guilty to committing acts of professional misconduct. Both acknowledged that in the summer of 2016, they engaged in disgraceful, dishonorable, or unprofessional conduct by sending harassing emails to then OMA President Dr. Virginia Wally. So one Kitchener anesthesiologist was suspended for a month, reprimanded, ordered to reimburse the college $6,000 in legal costs, and a Brampton cardiologist was spared a suspension but was reprimanded in order to pay the college the same in legal costs. So I am going through the story, and I'm like, oh, you know, bullying. No, these emails are nasty. Dr. Wally, you are the C word, crash and burn, as you deserve to do. Sincerely, F you and the OMA, and it went on and on, and one called this woman a turd and all this kind of stuff. Like, are we not adults, Randy?
Well, we're adults, and that's the point. We make our choices, and then we have to live by those choices, and so that's what these doctors are doing now. I don't know how you think that you're above what's going on in society right now, which is you can be shamed and you can be judged in a professional way for your behavior outside of the work that you're doing as a doctor. So the fact that he did nothing, these two did nothing wrong as a doctor, but their behavior as doctors was totally inappropriate. And you can be judged by that, just like you can if you're a teacher, just like you can if you're in any profession nowadays. And so I was actually shocked that someone would be bold enough. I was going to say something different with a B word. Would be bold enough to use the C word in an email to the head of your professional organization. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's a cautionary tale. And what's the old saying? You know, take 10 minutes. Don't hit
the
send
old
button.
Saying?
I don't know what the old. I don't know what it is. Take a minute. Take a deep breath.
Back 24 hours. Days.
But do not hit the send button until you have a sober second look at what you're about to send. But yeah, you're held to account. You're held to a certain set of standards within your own professional organization. That's what happened here. The discipline came down. They're going to live with it. They're going to move on, and hopefully they don't do it again.
And Jenny, it's an interesting point about taking a sober second look at what you're about to send. But this is repeated stuff. These are like minutes after F off, F this, F you. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, minutes apart. And I don't think it was just on one occasion, right? It was over a span of time. So I don't think that their reprimand is probably strong enough. I don't think it even actually sends a message to their colleagues. It's unfortunate because you do have to be cognizant of what you're sending to people, and you're putting it in an email. Once you put that in an email, it's public. It's gone.
But
it's out there for the rest of the world.
You don't think this is strong enough? I mean, now if Dr. Troy Christie, Chris Drone, is your doctor, he's your anesthesiologist. Well, maybe you wouldn't know the name of your anesthesiologist.
Probably
but you'd
not.
Certainly
yeah.
know the name of your cardiologist, Dr. Michael, I can't pronounce your last name. Tandra Wijaya.
That's why in the business we say the Brampton cardiologist.
The Brampton cardiologist.
hey, but there's other Brampton cardiologists out there. Who,
right, but if he's your
would
doctor,
not do such
are
a
you,
thing.
How do you feel if you find this out in the news that he's, you know, would it actually make you change your
That's
doctor?
That's an interesting question. Or would it at least affect the way you look at your doctor? For me, I think it would.
I think it all depends on what side of the issue you stand on, because I think, to his point, he was upset with some decisions that were going on with his professional organization and the leadership there. I mean, that's how I read the
yeah,
article.
Yeah, but the issue is...
But
that's inside baseball stuff. Like, I don't think anyone's going to judge him based on the issue. I think they're going to be like, wow...
The way
you,
he
like,
handled
talk, yeah,
it.
You talk to someone like that,
that's
maybe
not going to get
you care.
Anywhere.
Well, you know, like I said, at some point you have to make sure that you have that inner dialogue going on in your head and not putting it down in an email and sending it out there. Because I think everyone has had those moments where they just get so frustrated and so pissed off. And who hasn't dropped the occasional F-bomb
sure.
now and then? But sending it to a colleague through email, yeah, inappropriate.
It's actually a miracle it doesn't happen more often. Like,
yeah.
If you think about it, we've got email at our fingertips right mm-hmm. now. We get incensed. At least once a day, maybe, potentially once a week.
But again,
it doesn't happen. I
go back to the thing that everybody has a weak moment and everybody gets heated. But to send repeated emails with this type of language tells you something about, I don't know, where the person thinks they're at and what they're in, how they're entitled to speak to the head of their organization.
And what were they hoping to accomplish? I mean, the reality is them sending this over and over again isn't going to get them anywhere. It's not going to make them change their mind. So what were you hoping to get out of it? I hope you feel better. I hope spending the money on it makes you feel better, because that's all it was going to get you. It's not getting you anywhere. It's like we say with our children. You don't have to like everybody, but you have to treat everybody with respect and kindness. You can say what's on your mind in a polite way. You don't have to be vulgar.
Doug Ford will be sworn as Ontario's 26th Premier Friday, followed by an outdoor public celebration at Queen's Park that thousands are expected to attend. Almost 33 years to the day after Liberal David Peterson ushered out 42 years of Conservative rule with a swearing-in ceremony on the front lawn of Queen Park, Ford will similarly signal the conclusion of nearly 15 years of Liberal governments. Other than renting chairs, There is minimal additional expense to the outdoor festivities, in part because Queen's Park was already gearing up for the annual Canada Day celebrations July 1st. Sandy, let me start with you. He wants to be for the people, so he is going to be out there with the people, rain or shine.
Yeah, so I think it's a great kickoff to his administration. He'll be making his cabinet announcement shortly thereafter. I would like to think that everyone is going to give Mr. Ford the benefit of the doubt, let him implement his policies, his government, and try to help the best that they can. So this is the big kickoff. Go out there, support your new government, and I'll certainly be doing that as well.
Hey, on a side note, do you guys know where Peterson lives? Caledon. I'm just throwing that out there.
Summers in Niagara, though,
him,
I think.
Yeah, right. Him and Ernie Eves, both in Caledon. I think that it's great. It is supposed to be a government for the people, and he's being sworn in amongst the people because this is to be their government. And it is following the same sort of idea that Peterson brought forward. A fresh wave, a fresh air, airing out the government and opening it back up to actually be what the people need and want is something, I think it's something that is great. And I think it's being part of the city.
How about you, Randy?
I think it's a great, believe it or not, I do think it's a great idea. I think it's a little transparent hauling out Peterson as the guy who did it first to inoculate against criticism. I mean, say, my opposition did this and I thought it was a great idea, so I'm going to do it as well. I think that inoculates against criticism for anybody who might say it's showy, it's kitschy, it's whatever. But I do think it's a good idea. And I do agree with Sandy that we should give this guy the benefit of the doubt. You know, there's going to be times for sure where we're going to disagree and criticize. I don't think I've seen that yet. Maybe on some of the environmental announcements for sure, but not on this.
No, and I think you're right. I think that's actually a great point. This is the beginning. Let the person enjoy this day, have this day, celebrate it with the people, and then let the criticism begin once the decisions start being made and people should hold the government to account, no matter what side you're on.
Yeah, I find some of the rhetoric, especially on social media, exhausting.
Exhausting.
I mean, I see people with these pre-established partisan points of view that are so predictable and so tired. And it you see it in media, the way that we cover these stories. I mean, the guy hasn't even, I mean, well, he's done some things, but at the beginning, hadn't even done anything yet, and we were already criticizing him. So I think that let's just wait and see and judge him based on his actions, not what we think he might do.
Great to have you along, and it is the Tuesday Roundtable. Randy, Sandy, and Jenny from the farm. A Canadian Forces VIP trip that ended in a sex assault charge against former NHL player Dave Tiger Williams cost taxpayers more than $337,000. That is according to figures compiled by Post Media. When Williams was charged in February, the Canadian Forces suggested such trips, which involve sending celebrities and sports personalities overseas to boost the morale of troops. They said they cost around $15,000 each. The flight to Greece and Latvia was planned by the Office of Chief of the Defense Staff, General John Vance, involved 30 military and civilian VIPs traveling on a Royal Canadian Air Force passenger jet that can seat 194. I think we probably all have an idea that these things are very lighthearted and lots of fun. It's beyond that. This party flight idea has been called the party flight by some military personnel. VIPs allowed to bring their own booze on the plane. There are allegations two individuals were so drunk they urinated themselves. Video from the flight showed people with their drinks, including one of Vance's staff, dancing in the aisles of the aircraft as a rock band played in the back of the plane. I don't know, Randy, what do you think? This is almost a breeding ground for something to go wrong.
Of course it is. I mean, and now that they've been caught, I suspect we won't see many more of them. The fact that you can bring your own alcohol on a plane, I mean, this is really like chartering a private jet. They say the average cost of such a visit is $15,000. The cost of this one is $265,000.
Plus.
I just think, look, obviously, some bad decisions were made. I agree with the notion that we want to lift the morale of the troops and we should be sending people over to do that. I don't even mind spending a lot of money to do that because I think it's a worthwhile thing to do. But I think that you also have to treat the military with respect, not get plastered on the way over there and not be disrespectful. And, you know, the same rules apply to any corporation, but especially to our military and our government. So I don't think we'll see very many more of these.
Yeah, and I don't want to conflate the two issues. Number one, I'm hoping that there's a program in place and there's funding available to provide uplifting messages and support the troops on these, you know, morale kind of missions. I get that. But if this is the mission, then they better seriously have a look at revamping it, because there are so many problems with this particular program. If this is the program, that it needs to be overhauled, and you know, something has to be done.
And I think the point is good, that we want to do as much as we can to lift the morale of troops. But Jenny, if it's turning into a drunk fest, like this seems to be the thing, bring all the booze, get smashed on the plane. How great is that to stumble off the plane? Like, I mean, really, we need people who are going to take this seriously and take it as a mission of good.
Yeah, and we're talking about the hard costs right now, but what about the reputational costs right now to the Canadian Air Force? Because this is unacceptable behavior. There's allegations of sexual misconduct. If this is the program that you're rolling out and then you're standing behind it and defending it, then there's some serious problems within the leadership of that particular program. So these are the changes that have to be implemented. Hopefully these are the concerns that have been brought to light, and they're going to fix it.
You don't need an army escort to be part of the Mile High Club.
Really? Just asking.
And I think, you know, we do have to find ways to boost the morale. Some of these men and women are overseas away from their families, especially during the holiday seasons, is extremely difficult for them. So it's great to show support. And I don't think that any Canadian from coast to coast to coast would argue with that. I think what they're looking at is going, this is not what is intended. Our tax dollars should not be going for you to party. You should be going there to, you know, to provide a service. And I'm sure that most of these men and women that go to entertain the troops and to lift their morale, that is their intention. But it's not to actually party. And they're supposed to be giving something of themselves too. And that's not what's happening.
Okay, we've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to ask the former football player about this, because I think we disagree on it. But this is a great story, okay? Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Laurent Duvernay-Tardif graduated from McGill Medical School in May. And he is hoping that the NFL will let him put something on the back of his jersey that's never been on the back of an NFL player's jersey before. So as the only active player who also happens to hold a real medical degree, Duvernay-Tardif made a request to the league and asked if he would be allowed to put MD on the back of his uniform. I don't like the idea. You love the idea.
I love the idea. And I'll tell you why. I played professional football for almost a dozen years. And I love Larry, affectionately known as Larry amongst the brotherhood. This is a guy that didn't put anything on hold. He did it all. He successfully did his degree. He's a surgeon, and he's playing professional football in the NFL. I think those kind of things should be recognized. And with all due respect, the NFL has no problem putting a Budweiser label or some kind of sponsorship decal on a jersey. Why not celebrate the accomplishments of Larry? I don't know. I'm just throwing this out there. How many other active NFL players are doctors and did that degree? Yeah, exactly. None. And did that degree during their playing career? I just think, I don't think every accomplishment has to be recognized and celebrated, but I do believe that when you have these one-offs and these great opportunities to celebrate the off-field accomplishments of your greatest asset, which is your players, I think you should do it.
Randy?
I was just thinking that then, like, if you're a chartered accountant, would you have, like, Sandy Annunziata CFA on the back? Or, like, how would this work? But, you know, I could be convinced otherwise. It is effectively their business card, right? Their jersey is their business card. So maybe you do put MD on the back. Maybe it does spark some interesting conversations with children. I just don't know where you draw the line, Sandy.
Jenny? Yeah, like how do you say, yeah, do you allow one for a BA? I think
LLB.
The point of it is that we're showing our children you can go to school and get a good education and you can play professional sports.
And he still decided, despite getting his medical degree, that it was still more worthwhile for him to play football. So what kind of story does that say?
At this point, but you know what? Let me ask you this as a final word. Yeah. In all seriousness, can you talk for a second about how difficult it would be to play pro football and become a doctor at the same time in terms of scheduling?
It is virtually impossible. virtually impossible, especially the demands at that that level at the NFL, which is it's a 7 day a week, a 24-hour day, and a 365-day endeavor. There is no off season technically in any professional sports anymore. So to do what he did and accomplish is absolutely incredible. It is a feat, and that's why I celebrate it, and that's why I'm so proud to be a part of that brotherhood.
Thanks, everyone. Have
Thank
a great.
You.